This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph. The first perek, the Mishnah gave a kind of introduction to Seder Taharos with many of the foundational principles of this Seder of Mishnayos. This perek, Perek Beis, we begin to discuss the main topic of this Masechta, the topic of Kelim, of the various types of halachic utensils and their particular Tumah v'Tahara rules. This perek through Perek Yud will discuss Klei Cheres, earthenware utensils, which, as we'll see, are subject to many unique rules. In order to appreciate how the Klei Cheres is unique, the Mishnah first mentions some rules that apply to other types of utensils. The Mishnah says, Klei Eitz, Klei Or, Klei Etzem, Klei Schuches. One rule that we have when it comes to wooden, leather, bone, or glass kelim is that, at least generally speaking, pshutein tahorim, flat versions of these utensils, that is, that lack any receptacle, they're not shaped in a way that it could contain something, they, generally speaking, are tahor, that is, they're not susceptible to tumah. When we use the words tahor and tameh in this masechta, usually it's not a description of what the kli is right now, its actual status now, but it's a question of whether it's susceptible to either of those statuses. The Mishnah says that we have this general rule that utensils of the aforementioned materials that lack a toch, that are not containers, they have no receptacle, are not susceptible to ritual impurity. If you take a dead sheretz, let's say, and touch some, let's say, a flat wooden board, it doesn't contract tumah. Versions of utensils of the aforementioned materials that do have a toch, they have a receptacle, can become tame. It should be noted that of the materials the Mishnah mentioned, all of them, again, if they have a base kibbol, a receptacle, will be subject to tumah on the biblical level, except for glass utensils. On the biblical level, glass utensils are not subject to tumah at all, but the Rabbanan decreed that they are, because the glass, which is made from sand, is similar to earthenware utensils, which, as we'll see, certainly are subject to biblical impurity. And in terms of the specific rules that apply to glassware, in some ways, the Rabbanan made glass utensils similar to earthenware utensils, in other ways, to utensils of other materials. And the Mishnah statement that utensils made from wood, leather, or bone that do not have a base kibbol, it's flat, there's no receptacle, and they are not subject to tumah. That statement is not absolutely true. It's generally true. Certainly, on the biblical level, utensils of these materials are not subject to tumah, as we derive from the pasuk. But depending on the specific or flat type of wood, leather, or bone utensil we're discussing, sometimes there is a rabbinic tumah there. Whereas when it comes to flat glassware, there's never any tumah. Not even on the rabbinic level, which is also true of flat earthenware. As such, an earthenware object will never be subject to tumah. And so in this regard, the Rabbanan set up the rules for glassware the same as for earthenware. The Mishnah states further, if nishbru, of any of the aforementioned utensils, in wood, leather, bone, or glass, became tumah and then broke, taheru, the tumah would depart. And so the shards left from the broken keli would not have any tum anymore. If some food, let's say, touched one of the shards, the food would not become tameh. And this actually comes from the pasuk that discusses earthenware utensils. The Torah there says that breaking the vessel purifies it. The same applies to utensils of any of these materials. The Mishnah says, Chazer va'asa mehim kelim, if you went and put the broken pieces together and made the vessel anew, mekablim tumah mikanu laba. Well, it then is a keli once again, and therefore can become tameh going forward. This is in contrast to metal utensils that we'll see in Perek Yud Aleph, where there's a halacha that in certain circumstances, if the vessel was broken, and so that causes the tumah to depart, but then it's put back together, then under certain conditions, there's a rabbinic decree that says that the original tumah would return. But that doesn't apply to earthenware utensils or wooden, leather, bone, or glass utensils. The Mishnah now begins to discuss Klei Cheres, and again, this topic will continue through Perek Yud. The Mishnah says, Klei cheres uklei neser tum'asan shava. Earthenware utensils, as well as utensils made of neser, which is either alum or might be chalk, these two are in the same category. This would all go under the category of klei cheres. Classic klei cheres is where one uses a clay and fashions that into whatever utensil, and then that is fired in the kiln. But again, it could be made of this neser as well. Either one would be categorized as klei cheres. The rules for klei cheres are as follows. First of all, mistamin u'mitamin ba'avir. They both become tameh and transmit tameh through their interior airspace. That is, if somebody takes a tameh source, let's say a dead sheretz, and suspends that within a klei cheres, the kli becomes tameh, even though the sheretz didn't touch the walls of the kli. And if a klei cheres became tameh, and then somebody suspended some food within the klei cheres, the food would become tameh, even though, again, it didn't touch the walls of the klei cheres. This is based on the pasuk's language, that the pasuk indicates that if it tameh klei cheres, then kol asher besocho yitma, anything that is in there becomes tameh. The implication is, even if, let's say, it's a pile of mustard seeds, where many of the units are not actually touching the walls, still become tameh. And from there we extrapolate that it works the same way as far as the kli contracting tumah to begin with. It happens through the interior airspace of the kli, and without any necessity that the tumah source touch the kli. This quality is unique to klei cheres. Another halach that applies to the klei cheres is that umetamen me'achareyan. It can become tameh from its underside. The Mishnah here is referring to a klei cheres that has a hollow section at its bottom. So you think of, let's, you know, a kiddush cup, where often there's, you know, a stem and then a base, so that if you would turn it upside down, there would be a toch, it's a receptacle. You could, in theory, you know, put things in that space, and now that the kli is turned upside down. The Mishnah says, if a tumah source touched that hollow space in the base of the klei cheres, then the base becomes tameh. This is not biblical tumah. On the biblical level, the hollow base is not a proper toch, because it's not really meant to contain things, it's just the base. But the Rabbanan decreed that we consider this a kind of a toch, and therefore it could become tameh. However, the Rabbanan's decree only applies if the tumah source actually touches the interior of that hollow base, and only the base becomes tameh, not the rest of the kli. The Mishnah states further, that ve'einan mitamin migabehan. Another fundamental quality of the klei cheres is that it does not become tameh from the outside. And so, for example, if somebody took a dead sheretz and touch that to the exterior of a klei cheres, it does not become tameh whatsoever. For the pasuk describes the case of a klei cheres becoming tameh. Pasuk's example is where a dead sheretz falls in. It says, "Kol klei cheres asher yipol mehem el tocho yitma." If the sheretz falls inside of the klei cheres becomes tameh. So from this language we derive that that's the only way a klei cheres is able to contract tuma from the interior. Now, even if it doesn't touch the interior, again, as we said, just enters the airspace of the interior, then it becomes tameh. But if the sheretz touches the outside of the klei cheres, the kli does not become tameh. And this is in contrast to all other kalim, where the halacha is if a tumah source touches the kli, it does become tameh. Now, once a klei cheres becomes tameh, once some tumah source went inside of a klei cheres, so okay, the kli is tameh. If the exterior of the kli touches, let's say, some food, the food does become tameh. So klei cheres is able to transmit tumah from gabo, from its exterior. It just cannot become tameh from its exterior. The Mishnah concludes, "Ushvirasan hi taharasan." Breaking the klei cheres is the way, the only way that it can be purified, as the pasuk in Shmini states. If a klei cheres becomes tameh ve'ososi shboru, then you shall break it. That's the only way it could become pure. This is in contrast to tameh utensils of other materials, where although, yes, if you break the utensil, that would cause the tumah to depart, but that's not the only way to do it. You could instead immerse the kli in a mikvah. In the case of the klei cheres, though, we derive from the pasuk's language that there's no option of immersing it in a mikvah to purify it. The only way to purify klei cheres is by breaking it.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.